Actually, some of you may remember or realize, this is sort of my first full official Go Sunday. I started a couple years ago, like right after the one that had been from 2019 and then 2020. We did kind of have Go Sunday. I think we were outside in the courtyard, but it was obviously not the same as this, with COVID impacts being even more significant. So I'm really excited about what we're doing today, what it marks for our season, and how we're going forward in ministry. It reminds me a little bit of a tradition, kind of a small one that we've built up in my family whenever we come to an important transition time. And that's my mom asking me, by now sort of a joke, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but the first time she asked it, it got a big reaction from me. She says, "Rob, does it make you feel old that you have a youngest baby brother who just graduated from college, for instance?" That was a few years ago. And as you might expect, I kind of would look at her with this the first few times it happened and say, I don't know. Does it make you feel old to be asking one of your kids if they feel old? Like, what? How are you figuring this exactly? So that's silly, and I think she wasn't really thinking about that the first time she asked me, and so it got a big reaction. But now, you know, we kind of knowingly look at each other, and we'll have that conversation is some new thing happens. Both of my brothers in the last year or so have had kids for the first time, and so we had some of those same conversations. But it's kind of transitioned from, does it make you feel old, that to a different type of question, maybe a more reflective question. How does it feel to have a younger brother with a baby nephew for you, baby niece for you? That type of question isn't just about, you know, being silly and how old and creaky and whatever else you feel. Like I said, it gives that reflection. It says, hey, let's work out together. What does it mean to be a family as we go through different life stages, as we experience change, as we see new circumstances? Time is passing. Some things are going to stay the same. We're still a family. Still your brother. Still love each other. Still want to support each other. But, you know, as new things happen, you realize that new things are needed for what it looks like to still be that same family. I can't keep treating him the same way I did when he was 7 and running around like crazy and wanted to, you know, knock him around a little bit or tell him to stop annoying me or whatever else. We all have to grow into some new things as these transitions happen. So we ask ourselves essentially, how is it that we exist as a family in each new season, now that some new thing has come along? I think we all know that doesn't just happen in my family. All of life is like this for all of us. We're constantly figuring out who we think we are. We're finding new ways to manage our friendships as new things happen in people's lives. Even in organizations and groups that we're a part of, including for a church, we have those times where we stop and look at each other and say, how do we be ourselves now as this new thing is happening? How do we hold on to what's important and use that as support and foundation? How do we find the new things that are needed to respond best to the new things that are happening that we're experiencing? And life is always complicated with that. Change and transition sometimes are really exciting and energizing. We know a lot of times change can also be traumatic and overwhelming. And really, probably most of the time, big changes are all of those things at once plus more mixed together. But it will always inevitably be part of life. And thankfully, God understands this. The Bible is full of stories and passages, especially to help us get our bearings in these very times of change and finding who are we even as things continue to transition. God wants to help us go through that process. In fact, if we read the Bible, we can often see that God is especially close to people in those exact times, going through those exact feelings, and that He will move the most in their lives and bring what is most needed most in their lives, especially in those times. I think that one good way of making sense of the entire arc of the Bible is actually seeing how these types of questions go through time and experience through the Bible. Some of the questions that you could ask yourself to understand the Bible, if you looked at it this way, is, How do we live as God's family, as little limited creations? How do we live as God's family if we're slaves and barely seen as people? How do we live as God's family when we have our own land and nation? How do we live as God's family when we're conquered and taken over and taken away from our homeland and its apparent sense of security? How do we live as God's family if God became one of us? How do we live as God's family when we see glimpses of the full promise of God's kingdom, but we're also still living in struggle and frustration? Our passages today are examples of some of the most important times where God's people are asking themselves those exact types of questions. And so they can help us navigate when we are having those own feelings ourselves, or we're going through our own opportunities in times of transition. And we can see that God's response gives a range of support that's needed. So we're never trying to just shove any shape of peg into one round hole. God knows how to respond to each of our circumstances. But we'll also be able to see certain commonalities that can link our experiences together and help us see that we're a part of a shared life from God that's bigger than any one of us. So we're never completely on our own. And when we can realize that that is part of what we have in our life of faith, then I think our own circumstances and how we figure out how to build on our foundation together in this current circumstance that we're doing, or really any season, will be able to become clearer and more important for us. So I want us to look together today. What are some of the unique things that the exiles that are returning from Persia after being conquered? That's what Nehemiah is about. There are people who were in first Babylon and then Persia. After Judah and Israel were conquered, they were carried off. And now they're coming back and they have the opportunity to rebuild Jerusalem, their home, after 70 years, to rebuild the temple where they find their most connection with God after all that time. And then we're also going to see how Jesus' followers are first starting their ministry together without Jesus physically present with them. Those are really big, important times. I think we can learn important things from both, and we'll see what's unique about them, but how they can still connect to our unique experience. And we'll see some common threads go between both and all the way onto ourselves. So the first thing I want us to notice is that in Nehemiah, the returned exiles had to acknowledge problems in their past that still had ripple effects. And then they had to make some changes and make some things right. So in Nehemiah, we see people saying, our past is important, but we have to be able to maybe do some things with it and change it. On the other hand, in Acts, we see the disciples going back to, not as far, but their past with Jesus, and claiming those roots in powerful ways, even though it actually put them at more risk. So what do I mean by that? So again, in Nehemiah, the exiles are returning after 70 years of their people being in another country, having to live under another regime, often being persecuted for having beliefs that were different than the country that they were living in. But then they were able to return. They're excited about being able to come back, rebuild their city, rebuild their temple. However, they read the book of the law, and what does the Bible tell us there? That at first their impulse was to weep, to be sad and mournful, even in this moment of coming home. Why would that be? They were realizing, again, many of these, you've got to remember, would be children or grandchildren of the people who were conquered, or maybe even more than that, multiple generations removed. But realizing our people have this legacy, when we read the law, of not fulfilling the law. They weren't doing God's justice. They weren't loving each other the way that God called them to. They were not following God the way that God asked them to, so that life could be good for them and everyone around them. And so, they lived themselves into being conquered and being taken away and having to experience God's faithfulness in a new way away from the temple. And that, as you would imagine, would be crushing in many ways. To say, we can see all the things that God can do, but we can also see the ways that it can get messed up. And we don't want to fall into those same patterns. We want to be honest about the things that maybe we weren't specifically those people who got carried away, but we're a part of that legacy. And we want to root ourselves in God's faithfulness, but we also want to be honest about the things that were not right and be a part of making them right in this new season. On the other hand, in Acts, the disciples are saying, yep, we are followers of Jesus Christ, who you killed not that long ago. There's a world in which they could have said, you know, we love God. God helped us heal this lame man. That's what they were being brought before the Sadducees about. They helped heal a lame man. That was following just how Jesus taught them. Luke and Acts, you may not know this, were originally one whole text together. And Luke, who wrote it, intentionally wrote it so that you could see things Jesus was doing in Luke. And then you go in Acts, and you see the church and the disciples doing very similar or even the same things. So you can see connections that God was doing between the two communities. And so in Luke, there's a healing of a lame man from Jesus. That's the one where they drop their friend from the ceiling to Jesus. And then here we see the disciples healing the lame man. But in both cases, the religious rulers say, we don't like it. Something's wrong with you. We don't know where that power comes from. We got to put our thumb on this and figure out if we're going to let it happen or not. So they see that same connection. But they could have decided the best way to do this is to have God help us with this power. We'll get lots of people's attention. But we don't have to put ourselves at the same risk of Jesus ultimately dying and being executed. But they were willing to root themselves specifically in Jesus. And not just Jesus, the powerful one, but actually even Jesus, the one who was persecuted. Jesus, the one who you were angry at. Jesus, the one whose expectations you had for, the expectations you had for him, he did not fulfill. The Christ, the Messiah, was someone who was supposed to come in and eliminate all the Romans, all the people who were not good Jewish people, and you get rid of all of them, you kill them all, and then all the good Jewish people get to live life happily. But Jesus as the Messiah was not that. Jesus was the Messiah was the one who brought change, who brought love, who brought forgiveness, who brought transformation, who brought healing to people who were not seen as clean or good enough. And that's what got him killed. And the disciples said, it's important that we put ourselves with that type of person, with those types of values, even if it means that we're going to get arrested and have people angry at us the same way. And so that's what we see in both, that the same way we could take inspiration and say, we look at our past, we celebrate even the parts that maybe some people say, well, is that the best measure of success? It's God's measure of success, so we celebrate it. Are there things that we need to change? We're willing to do that too. But the key ingredient in both that holds them together is that they were embodying God's values, most of all, as their most important measurement, nothing else. Those values of justice, of grace, of love, of service. In a family, like with my family, when we have those moments, that's like a family being willing to see children grow up. And the children themselves need to stretch themselves and not just be completely dependent on the family for all their life. They need to come into their own person and find ways to contribute and have a life that's thriving for themselves. But at the same time, in order to do that, the family often needs to let go of expectations and pressures and let a child grow up into themselves and not grow up into the version of themselves that other members of the family said that's the only thing that you can be. When a family does that together, you see everyone being able to thrive, even though it takes some balance and people being willing to step out in boldness, other people being able to let go of things that maybe they would have felt most comfortable with, but that everyone is supporting each other so that everyone can thrive in the best way. Another thing that we see kind of in contrast that's unique between Acts and Nehemiah, in Acts, the disciples have to be able to see more in what they have than what they outwardly possess. When Peter heals the lame man in chapter 3 of Acts, he tells him as he's walking down the street and the lame man calls out to him asking for money, because that's what he would do with most people, but Peter said, silver and gold I do not have, but what I do have I offer to you with love. In the name of Jesus, rise and walk. So even though he doesn't have resources the way that people normally expect, he knows that he carries something even more important than that and is willing to share it. On the other hand, the Nehemiah returned exiles have wonderful resources. They're able to rebuild the city. They're able to rebuild the temple. They're able to do it with gold and with decorations and with cedar. But they have to realize that their possessions need to have more meaning than just the stuff that they have. They have to infuse them with God's values. And those are two similar things, but coming at it from different places, right? Sometimes it's hard for us to say, if I don't have something that I can touch, that I can feel, that I can see, how do I know that I'm going to be able to do the thing that God has called me to? But there are resources that God gives us, if we're willing to look for them and value them and express them, that will make us able to do amazing, even miraculous things. And God will help us see that. Of the same token, for the exiles, they were realizing, yeah, we have amazing resources. Our ancestors had amazing resources of their city and the temple. But they were realizing, just because we have those things, doesn't mean that everything will be perfect automatically between us and God. It doesn't mean that everything will be easy. It doesn't mean that all the problems will automatically have solutions. We still need to rely on God. We still need to see the values and how we use these resources that God has given us as even more important than the resources themselves. And so they have to root themselves again in God's values of justice and love. And they learn, in having to release them and going into exile, that God didn't leave them alone. God was still with them there. God was with them in all places, amongst all people, and that helped them see those resources in a new way because they'd experienced fullness and loss, normal expectations, and having to stretch themselves. And in both, again, we see that God's family is staying ready to embody God's values in whatever situation is needed, and they do this by being both deeply rooted and by being quickly reflexive, having quick reflexes. Now, for those of us who are football fans, even though we're mourning Ohio State's loss, right, that probably seems like an oxymoron. You can't both be deeply rooted and have quick reflexes. Probably hear things on the commentary, right? Ball carrier does a really good move, showing those quick reflexes, and it makes someone look like they're rooted to the spot when they miss the tackle. So it seems like those things couldn't be compatible. But in God's family, we're able to hold both together. For a family that we can relate to, this could be a lot like passing down, slightly changing, or creating new traditions whenever we get together and bring those bonds of family together. A whole family then can be a part of a tradition. It doesn't just become that other people are doing someone else's tradition. That started with one people, and then five generations down, it doesn't mean anything to them. They're just kind of going through the motions because that was someone else's thing. In my dad's family, food is really, really important. Sounds like this for a lot of other people too, exactly, right? The first time my mom met my dad's family was at a Thanksgiving dinner. They sat down at the table at 11 a.m. They didn't get up until 8 p.m. Just grazing and talking and chatting the whole time. Right? Going in and out, each new little course, having some things. But it's around that table that they found those connections. And that's a story that they still tell about what it means to be in that family. But they also have been amazing at taking that tradition and making room for more and more people. When Wendy and I were first together, she didn't eat meat. And they live in Wisconsin, they thought that meant, oh, okay, like, so you eat chicken, but not, like, beef or pork or whatever. No meat at all. But first Thanksgiving we were there, they had a tofurkey on the table. And ever since then, when we go out with my kids who are a little bit picky, they always make sure, what are the foods that you actually want? Because we're going to make them, we're going to make them as good and fancy and wonderful as we possibly can. And we'll even come and help them come and learn to make it with us too. So we bond together around that. They don't say it only has to be our way with all our favorite foods. They keep that tradition moving and growing with each new person. And we know that in our church, we are in a time and set of circumstances where we are asking those same questions to ourselves. How do we continue to be God's family right now with all the things that we're experiencing? And I'll admit, I don't know the foundation that God has been building with everyone who's been a part of this church over the years, as well as all of you do. I'm so thankful for my 2 years here, but I know you do that on a bar graph for a lot of you, and that's barely registering on the scale compared to all the other years. But I do believe that we are in a great place to be working with God in building on that foundation. From getting to know you and sharing the years that I have, hearing all of your stories, I know how things like music and food and nature and family and making decisions together rather than having them imposed down on you have always bonded this church family together. And even though the specifics have looked different from season to season, or which people are participating at which levels over the years, and even though sometimes this process and all these things that bring us together have been really exciting and fun, and sometimes they've been difficult and challenging, those things have been our amazing foundation that we can be excited about. I also know this church has seen all sorts of people come through, to be members, to be staff, and that it's occupied different buildings, different remodels of buildings. And it's had lots of different ministries be a big part of what our life looks like together at different times. And through all of that, there is a line, a common thread that has persevered. And that has been our common, consistent aspiration to live God's values of love and welcome, of service and generosity, of creativity, and the care for the common good, and of making sure that everyone is cared for and always has wonderful ways to share their gifts. It's an amazing foundation and personality that God has raised up amongst all of you. And so it's really important that we celebrate such a great foundation, just like the priest said to the people of Israel. There might be things that right now we're feeling frustrated about, or a little overwhelmed or worried or concerned about. This is a great time to feel joyful about that foundation that God has built up, about that through line that we can see over the years. And because of that, it's also just as important that we make sure that we are still building on that amazing foundation that we've been able to be a part of. Just like in Acts, Peter and the disciples, even in those challenges, have hope. They have boldness. They're making sure that because they've experienced something so amazing, that they want to be a part of helping other people experience the same thing too. They want to see it continue and have that legacy. That's what we get to be a part of, because we know that there are new settings. We know that there are new circumstances. We know that there are new people who could do amazing, wonderful things in their life if we share the amazing, wonderful things that God has given us with them and those circumstances that need the types of things that we bring to the table. If we bring it there, that circumstance will be transformed in a really powerful way. And so that's what this next upcoming season is going to be all about. Celebrating that foundation. Being excited about all the things that it can continue to do in coming weeks, in coming months, in coming years. That's what the vision sustainability process that we're going to do is all about. So please do sign up for that, participate in it, share your stories, share the parts of the foundation that you are a building block in. We're going to be setting up to do important practical things for the foundation and for our building. And so we want to make sure that we're rooted in those values, just like the common thread all the way from Nehemiah to Acts to us has been. And we want to see how they exist in our church family and how they can continue to exist. I'm also going to be doing an upcoming sermon series that I'm calling Embrace a Little Crazy. People in Nehemiah and the people in Acts had to have God open up their eyes and their minds a little bit to see the way that God would help be helping them build on their foundation. In Nehemiah, they had to realize, oh my gosh, God is going to use the people that conquered and oppressed us to help us go back to our city and rebuild our temple. The Persians are going to help us with that. God would actually let them be included. I can barely wrap my mind around that. But that was a part of what their experience was, and they learned from it. In Acts, people like Peter and John, most of the stories we have from them in the Gospels are all the ways they're messing up and tripping up and making things worse. And so they have to believe in themselves. God can use me, the one Jesus kept saying, come on, Peter. You got to get it right eventually. Stop denying me. Stop worrying about who's the greatest and who's going to sit at my right hand or left hand to John. Right? they can believe that God is going to make them part of the powerful, amazing legacy of Jesus? Yes. But they had to have their minds opened up a little bit about it. So we'll get to have that experience together too. And most of all, please, as you hear this, take joy. Celebrate, starting with our coffee hour after, but continue in conversation and fellowship with each other. Share, encourage each other as much as possible during this season. What is that foundation that you love? What's that foundation you've seen somebody else help build? What's the foundation that you are proud of, that you've been a part of? Share that. Celebrate it. Help us figure out the next pieces that are going to go on top of all those amazing things you've done. Do this with God's guidance and with God's own love and celebration of you too. So we do that. We're going to start by thinking about how we continue to live our values and share our resources, and we pray for our offering.